The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Happy Cinco de Drinco week for those that celebrate, and certainly this past weekend of Houston sports might drive one to overindulge. Welcome into Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Polillo, Josh Jordan. You can find them on X at Polillo and at JoshJordan975. And you know, we're not doing this show. You can always read their work on sportsmap.com, read their blogs covering all things Houston sports. On today's episode, we'll try to be your hair of the dog for a bitter Houston sports hangover, and we'll talk about Lance McCullers' return and examine if the upcoming schedule is conducive to Houston making some hay. So we hinted at it, gents, less than a productive weekend for the Astros following that series win over the Tigers. The bad news is that the Astros drop a series to the worst team in the AL, while the Mariners and A's have both gone on some mini runs that have pushed Houston's deficit in the West back to three games. The good news is the Rangers are sinking like a rock. The Astros have gotten unexpected production from the bottom of the lineup. Yainer Diaz's offense is seemingly coming alive. Houston's pitching's helped them tread water in the division. So where if the bats finally do come alive, they are built to make a similar run to what we saw last season. So Charlie, we'll always start with you. We'll do that again today. How do you balance your feelings of concern for this team's sustained struggles offensively, even against bad teams, versus the fact that this team is just one winning streak away from being at the top of the division, if not taking it over?
Yeah, going into Chicago to face the White Sox, my thought was winning two out of three would have actually felt mildly disappointing, but certainly no crime. But the White Sox are so pitiful. They'd lost five straight series. They were 8-23. Last season, they were arguably the worst team post-1900 in the history of Major League Baseball. And forget only taking two out of three. The Astros lose two out of three. Fromber, egg lays on Friday. And then Sunday, all the positive of McCullers' return, and they puke it all up with the bullpen and the offense unable to push across a tying run. Then you have to sit through a rain delay for an hour and a half before they say, yeah, game's over. You lost. You lost the series to the White Sox. Well, at least Jalen Green doesn't play for them. You know, they're 17-16 opening the week in Milwaukee. Obviously, that's a very mediocre team. I would say from the glasses half full perspective, a 33-game stretch where you're mediocre is going to happen to every team in baseball, essentially. The Dodgers, the almighty Dodgers, are obviously vastly superior to the Astros. They already have a 19-game stretch this season in which they went 9-10. And I'll go back to the launch of this platinum era of Astros baseball, if you want that in past tense, okay. But 2017, when the Astros just kicked ass and took names from opening day forward, they were 42-16 that season. Then at the deadline, they add Justin Verlander, and their finishing kick was 22-8. Well, in between, they played 74 games. They went 37-37 over those 74 games. Now, I'm not suggesting that this could be a 100-win Astros team, and they have a 42-16 spurt in them. All I'm saying is that even though it's from the start of the season forward, and this could well turn out to be a team that's barely over 500 or glass half empty, barely under 500. But 17-16 is no big deal. If the record was one game better, they on pace to win, be on pace to win games in the upper 80s. As is, you're on pace to win 83, 84 games with more than 125 games left. So the pace numbers, the trend numbers, it's still too early, certainly on the macro team level. Just as pointing out, if the Seattle Mariners win the rest of the season at the rate they've won
So far this season, the Astros are dead. The American League West race is over. Well, do you think the Seattle Mariners are going to win 98 games? That is their win pace as they woke up on Cinco de Drinko, as you put it, Brandon. Yes, there are warning flares that this Astros team just isn't that good, but we're still in the early chapters of the book. I wouldn't skip all the way ahead to the end just yet.
Yeah, to me, this Astros team right now, what they've shown us, they're at best a 2 or 3 win over 500 ball club right now. It's early. They're streaky. They'll go out and beat some teams and look great, and then they'll do what they did against the White Sox, and it all comes down to just a few little things, right? You know, DiZenzo giveth, and then he taketh away with the home run and then the error. You look at Jake Myers. You can argue if he doesn't have the game of his life in game two, they get swept by the White Sox. But you could also argue they wouldn't have lost game three if Myers doesn't get picked off second base before Jeremy Pena gets a base hit, which would have been an extra run that would have come in very handy in game three. So it's all these little things. Over the course of the season, they'll sort themselves out. It's not that great and it's not that bad. I do think with the Mariners, though, that they're going to have to come back to the pack a little bit for the Astros to keep up with them, which is totally possible. The Mariners are 8-2 in their last 10 games. They're not going to keep that up going forward. So it's just something that we'll see as it goes along. I'm seeing good signs, and then I see stuff that's a little bit disappointing. But, you know, every week I let you know where the Astros are in their OPS in baseball, where their slugging is, stuff like that. For much of the season, they've, you know, been around 25th, you know, really looking poor. But as we look now, they are slowly improving as the season goes along. Just last week, you know, when I updated it, OPS, the Astros were 23rd. Well, now they've improved. They're 19th. Slugging, now the Astros are 21st. Last week, they're 25th. So little by little, they're starting to creep more to the middle of the pack in these offensive numbers. So there are some signs of encouragement, especially without Yordan doing much and Altuve doing much, and we'll get into all that. But there's a lot of guys that can really step up. And if they're slowly getting better right now without that happening, maybe there's a spurt where they really shoot up offensively and they get a little closer to the top 15, top 12 in baseball.
Mariners started the season 4-8 after taking 2 of 3 from the Rangers over the weekend. Since 4-8, 16-5. Well, that the Astros can't have a run like that is just silly. Point is, they need to put one together at some point if they want to leave 500 well in the rearview mirror.
The weird thing about those hitting numbers, Josh, as you bring them up, is last year the Astros were deceptively positioned in the top 10 in both batting average and an OPS, but yet were very middle of the pack when it came to actually scratching across runs, which has been their bugaboo this season. And while there's plenty of criticism to go around, you mentioned Jose Altuve. I think it's probably time that we zeroed in on that a little bit more acutely. Jose Altuve's decline in production is especially worrisome, just given his age. Now, he started out the year with some numbers that were below our expectations for him, but he has progressively gotten worse. Last 15 games, batting average of .213 with a .273 on-base percentage. Last 7 games, hitting .179 for his average. Again, the anemic production is not exclusive to him. But where are you guys at with all the red flags popping up around his performance at the plate? And when do you think we'll know whether this is just a slow start to the season for him versus a fast start to Jose's decline as a hitter?
Okay, you guys ready for this one? Back in the 80s, the Pittsburgh Pirates had an absolute laughingstock of an offensive player named Sammy Khalifa, the only Egyptian-heritaged player in big league history. Well, if you're an Astros fan and you're not worried about Jose Altuve, denial isn't just a river in Egypt. Altuve declined last season. He was still good, but the decline was substantial. More than 100 OPS points offensively, and we know about the defense that they were so spooked by how bad it became. He's now primarily left fielder, Jose Altuve. But we home in on the offense. It's brutal. To add on the numbers that you conveyed, Brandon, last 19 games, .187. Batting average. So starting the Milwaukee series, Altuve for the season at .260, OPS down to .679. But then if you peel another layer of the onion, there's some more stink. There's a .260 batting average, but Altuve is also 3 stolen bases. He's been caught 3 times. Base running blunders have also removed him from the base paths a couple of other times. So, you know, if you get a single and then you get caught stealing, you undid your hit.
So really, Altuve productively is hitting more in the 230s to this point in the season, right? The power has been marginalized. For his career, Jose Altuve's line drive percentage, 23%. So far, 2025, 11%. Check my math. That's a drop by more than half. We know he's never going to be a high walk guy to really jack up the on-base percentage that way. Altuve is also hitting ground balls at a greater rate than he's ever hit in his career. Now, terrific players can have three-week stretches, a month, maybe 6 weeks. Through his prime, Jeff Bagwell would become a lost sheep at the plate, it would seem like, for about a month every year. But by the end of the season, Bagwell's numbers were where you'd expect. With Altuve 35 years old on Tuesday, and last season was down the slope. So far this season is more steeply down the slope. Absolutely, there is cause for concern. I think the realistic view is that, yes, he can recover and still be a good player, but Altuve's days as a great player are done.
It's interesting. Looking at Altuve's numbers, he's been very streaky this year. He started out the season out of the first nine games, five of them he had multiple hits in, which that's terrific. We look now, he's had one multi-hit game since April 19th. He's had one homer since April 8th. So he's in one of those funks right now, and you just hope that when he gets hot, he kind of makes up for that and you feel a little better about it. But the swinging at the first pitch stuff is still driving me crazy. I know that there's numbers that you have a better chance if you get a fastball early, but to me, it just seems like he's in a hurry to ground out to shortstop or third base. And I thought Blummer made a great point. I thought the same thing the other day. McCullers throws like 30 pitches in that inning, and he comes out and swings at the first pitch and grounds out. It's like, look at a couple pitches. Give McCullers a chance to take a break. Why are you in such a hurry to ground out? Because that's seemingly what you do almost every time in that situation. So I feel like his head's not in the game as much as we would like to. And we see that with his base running and stuff like that. But I know he's a veteran player. Is that on Espada to remind Altuve, like, hey, McCullers just went out there and threw like 30 pitches. We need to take some time in these at-bats here. Or is that something that Altuve should know at this point in his career? I mean, we figure he should know how to run the bases a little better, and that's never really self-corrected either. So maybe there's some room for blame for everybody. But you just got to hope that he gets hot here, because it just doesn't look the same right now. And I'm not sure what that is. Him moving down to second in the lineup now, they've accommodated him in that aspect. He showed some signs after that first happened, but now not much is really going on with him. So I'm starting to have a little bit of concern here. And this is just the beginning, guys. We know we got many more years with Altuve. We're just hoping that the end of Biggio's career with Altuve wouldn't be seeing those signs right now. You know, he's starting to struggle with those sliders like Biggio did as well.
Yeah, and Altuve's always been a free swinger, but when you're mashing at an elite level, go back to peak Altuve, 17 and 18, and then the resurgence, 22 and 23, you're more willing to live with it. But in 2023, Altuve's last magnificent season, his chase rate was in the 28th percentile, meaning he swung at pitches outside the strike zone more than 72% of the rest of hitters in Major League Baseball. Okay, that's pretty free swinger, but hey, the results, who's to quibble? Well, last season, he was in the 6th percentile. So far this season, he's in the 4th percentile. So it's gone from free swinging to undisciplined. I mean, the last pitch that he struck out in the game Sunday against the White Sox, it was a foot and a half off the plate, right? That was the worst of the past of Jeremy Peña. That, I mean, come on, your pitch recognition can't be any better than that. That's where it is right now for Altuve. And Father Time can be cruel and vicious, or it's just an early season slump, borderline coma. He's also started 32 of the Astros' first 33 games. Hey, Joe Espada, he's not playing at a level to warrant that kind of playing time at his age. The Astros aren't chasing the schedule and their record the way they did last year when he felt like he couldn't take Altuve out of the lineup. And let's remember, from mid-May forward last season, Altuve was pretty average. Right? It was a hot start over the first month and a half that platformed his numbers for the season. He should not have only had one game off so far this year, even with spotting him as the designated hitter maybe half a dozen times thus far.
Yeah, Josh, you bring up a really interesting point, because one of the problems, just outside of that isolated incident during McCullers' start, one of the problems with trading away or letting go these stars that have been tent poles of these championship years is you have less voices in the locker room that can come to him as a peer and say, hey, brother, we need you to be smarter on the base path. Hey, brother, if your pitcher's out there struggling and throws 30 pitches, you need to be more conservative at the plate. And obviously, Joe Espada, as a new manager, I don't know that he's going to feel as emboldened to tell that to a guy who's headed towards or seemingly headed towards the Hall of Fame in Jose Altuve. So it really does bring up the question of who's going to have those conversations with him. If it's not going to self-correct, as you said, Josh, like who's going to have those conversations with him? It's not just about his own production. It's about the example that you're setting for the Cam Smiths of the world, for the Jeremy Peñas of the world. Now, granted, Jeremy's a little bit further along in his career and seemingly on an opposite trajectory right now. Just a quick message that if you're interested in advertising your service or product on the show, you can contact our friends on the sales team at houston.sportsmap.com/advertise. The link is in our description. Now, we brought up McCullers. He made his return, much anticipated. He's never been a super efficient pitcher, so I don't think anyone was expecting him to sprint out of the gate and dominate. 3 2/3, no runs allowed. Third was his best, as it was his only clean inning. What were your main takeaways from Lance's first appearance back?
If offered 3 2/3 scoreless innings from McCullers every start this season, you take that. It's asking a lot of bullpen innings, but you know what? He got you at least a turn and a half through the lineup, and if you haven't given up a run into the fourth inning, I think you're going to win a majority of the time. You nailed it, Brandon. He's never been, never will be a guy who goes 7 innings plus on anything approaching a regular basis. Took him 87 pitches to go the 3 2/3. Well, it was his first start since the 2022 World Series. So in that start, there's no inference, I don't think, to be drawn from that. I gave up 3 hits, walked 3, struck out 4. McCullers has had one full-length healthy season in his career. It was 2021. He made 28 starts. He led the American League in walks that season, right? So he has stuff with a lot of movement. He's just never been a pinpoint control guy. That lends itself to high pitch counts. I mean, getting to face the White Sox lineup the first time out, that was good, right? The second start will come against the Cincinnati Reds team that just has a lot more talent. So we'll see how effective McCullers is there. But all in all, for the first time out, I mean, what's to complain about? He didn't give up a run.
Yeah, the weather was not ideal, cold and rainy, having to come out there and do that in your first start. He just could not locate his slider. We know that's a big devastating pitch for him. I think he threw more changeups than he threw any other pitches in that game. The fastball sitting in the low 90s, or I think around, you know, 92 miles an hour. And if you look back at McCullers, as he moves along, he'll usually tick up, you know, to around 93, 94, at least in the past couple years, not dating way back, but in the last few years of McCullers. So I think that's a good sign that his velocity will be around 93, 94, which is fine as long as you have that curveball and slider. And now that changeup that he's obviously willing to throw a lot, I think that's a good thing for him. He was wild. Like I said, he couldn't locate the slider. He walked like 3 guys and hit a bat or 2. So when you do that, you're in trouble there. You're pitching out of the stretch. They're more lumbersome innings because guys are on base and you have to be more careful with your pitches. So yeah, overall, I think you're in good shape there. I noticed them, you know, sitting Paredes in that game. But before the game started, I was like, I get it. He's played every game. He needs some rest. But you're also thinking you're going to need some runs here because you're expecting the McCullers wanted to give him about 80 pitches. So you knew he wasn't going to go super deep. You knew there was going to be a lot of bullpen. I was hoping they'd put a little more offense in the lineup. When you got Dubon and Brendan Rodgers in your infield and they sat Cam Smith in that game too, there just wasn't a whole lot of pop in the lineup. And then that came to be the case. The Astros didn't score enough to win the ball game. So I didn't have a problem with playing Dubon, but maybe play Dubon at second. It seems like they just don't want to play DeZenzo or Cam Smith at third base anymore now that they're playing in the outfield. But what's the point of having these young, versatile players if you can't maximize the offense in your lineup when Yordan's not playing, when Paredes isn't playing, when Altuve's in a slump and Christian Walker hasn't been hitting that well? I didn't like that move by Espada. And at the end of the game, yeah, they didn't have enough runs. I know it was a shortened game. He can't control that. But at the end of the day, those were the results. So when you know your offense is not playing so well, can you afford to put in just a kind of all defensive infield? That didn't make a lot of sense to me.
Of course, Dubon delivers the 2-run single. Yeah. Well, stuff happens. You mentioned Yordan, Josh, who's been missing in action in terms of quality of performance. And for the better part of the last week, just missing in action. And they gave him a regularly scheduled off day Wednesday against the Tigers ahead of a day off for the team Thursday. And then he sits two of the three games against the White Sox. So was it, oh my goodness, the Astros were full of crap in addressing a player's health, or the inflammation flared up in his hand on a day off or 2 days off? Right, he had 2 days off, plays one game with two other days off. But how wacky is it that 2025 Yordan Alvarez, they don't miss that guy when he's out of the lineup? But of course you miss the threat and the fact that, well, Yordan needs to get it going or this offense has no chance. But it's just unfathomable, except of course it's fathomable because here we are. The two worst regulars in the Astros lineup this season are Altuve and Alvarez. You mentioned earlier, Brandon, that Yiner's been perking up. He still swings it way too much, but he and Christian Walker both hurtling the Mendoza line. So at least all the Astros' primary regulars are over 200 starting the Brewers series anyway. But Altuve and Alvarez, and we are now beyond that threshold of well over 100 plate appearances. Altuve has 131 at-bats through Sunday, where, all right, there's a whole lot of season left, but it's not a trivial portion of bad struggles where if a guy goes 1-for-11 for a weekend, he went 1-for-11 for a weekend. Big deal.
To me, it's the finales with Espada. He seems to put out just his meh lineups when you're trying to win a series here. I'm all for giving Paredes a day off, but could we wait until Yordan comes back in the lineup to do that? Could we not pick a finale when you have a chance to take a series? I feel like so often in game three of these series, they're kind of punting. And at the end of the year, that stuff catches up to you.
Well, that may be the issue, Josh. They may not know when Yordan's going to be back in the lineup. And while Jake Meyer's hitting out of his mind for a game and a series is cool, that's a great story and feel good for Jake, and it certainly helped the team and pick them up. You're not going to have a great season if Jake Meyer's is leading your team in OPS, unless the rising tide floats all boats. But so far, that hasn't been the case. Now, Houston's next series are against the Brewers, Reds, Royals, Rangers, and the Rays before then facing the Mariners and A's, who are above you in the standings. Three of those first five teams have losing records, and none of them at this point are more than three games over 500. So how important is this next stretch, especially because three of those teams that I listed are in your division? They are in division games. So how important is this stretch for Houston to stay in the thick of things?
I think it's only important if it's an extreme stretch of results. Right? They rip off 12 wins in 15 games. They're probably right about in first place at the end of the fortnight and change. Conversely, they dropped 10 of the 15. And yes, we know they were 10 games out in June last season. But odds are if they wind up 10 games out at any point this season, they're not going to come back from that. But, you know, if they go 7-8, 8-7, 9-6, you're not going to gain a lot of ground or lose a lot of ground. You just have consumed another 10% worth of the schedule. I do want to add, right, the Rangers, one of the series in there, for those who want at least somebody's head to roll, the Rangers Sunday, I know they share parking lots with the Cowboys. The Rangers fired their offensive coordinator, a guy named Donnie Ecker. The Rangers' offense has been for hunger so far this season. So I guess the hitting coach was spared, but their overarching offensive coordinator, the Rangers decided we need to change something, even if it's only to change something. The same guy who was their offensive coordinator 2 years ago when the Rangers offense was incredible for much of 2023 and, of course, ended with them winning the World Series.
And we've kind of talked about that with the hitting coaches, and I get it. You know, you want things to be a little more dire before you make a big move like that. The Astros seem really attached to their guys. And normally I would say if it's not working, you do need to make a change like the Rangers did. But as I listed the numbers earlier in the video, the Astros are slowly but surely improving in OPS and slugging. They're getting better as the season's going along here, despite not getting production from, you know, like Christian Walker and guys that you were really counting on in the middle of this lineup to give you something. But eventually, if it gets to a point where they're just not winning games and the offense isn't showing improvement, then yeah, it might be a chance for change. And Brandon, you talk about the upcoming schedule. I think part of it, you need the, not only do you need a win and pick up some series, you need the Mariners to start scuffling a little bit if you want to make up some ground. If the Mariners keep playing like this and the Astros are winning games, they're just kind of treading water. I just feel like right now the Astros are a 2 or 3 game above 500 type team until they get everything clicking. And who knows what's going to happen with Yordan and Altuve. And as we were talking before this video started, they just don't have any star power on the offensive side of the ball. Maybe Jeremy Peña could be in contention to make the All-Star team. That's about it. They don't have anybody else. So the pitching better hold up. Fromber's not exactly making me think he's looking like a Cy Young candidate this year. Even Hunter Brown struggled a little bit early. I'm not worried about him, but my point being, how long can the offense or the defense, the pitching, carry this team? The offense, the bats have to get going. There's just no star power. And you're looking around at what Kyle Tucker and Bregman are doing, talking about all-stars. Yeah, Bregman will probably be an all-star at third base. So it speaks volumes when you look around what you gave up and what you brought back in. This team's just not as good right now.
The crosshairs go foremost to Yordan. He'd been a superstar slugger, 4 years running. He's 27 years old. He's obviously their most gifted offensive talent. He needs to get back to performing like it. Hey, maybe Jorge Polanco is going to hit 360 and Cal Raleigh is going to hit 55 home runs, right? What goes up generally comes down. But if the Mariners are going to run away with it, there's still the wild card front. And you look at the overall American League picture. The Astros are part of the mediocrity, but there is a morass of mediocrity. There aren't 3 non-division winners to be in the AL that anyone would reasonably suggest. The Astros aren't going to be close to them in September. So 17-16 is frustrating and just meh, but it's not like they're in trouble because of their standings the second week of May.
Walker's just so inconsistent quickly, Brandon. That's what bothers me. He's gone 0-for-5. He did it in one game in the White Sox series and went 0-for-5 in the finale of the Detroit series. Man, that's hard when your fourth or fifth hitter is going 0-for-5, at least in one game in every series. It's just boom or bust, and we haven't seen that much boom.
Going back to your point, Josh, I think, you know, the Mariners, part of their DNA is making these runs, and then it's usually been followed by a run in the opposite direction that kind of equals it out. I'm more concerned about what Houston is capable or incapable of, because this team has experienced so much turnover. As much as we reference the run that Houston went on last year to overtake the division, this isn't the same team. So whether this team can replicate what they did last year, it remains to be seen. And we brought up Dana Brown over the offseason talking about wanting to have a different approach at the plate. So I went back and looked when that quote was made. That was during the winter meetings. That was before Alex Bregman had decided on a team. This was something that they talked about way before the season started, way before they acquired Christian Walker. We didn't even know Isak Paredes would be on this team. We didn't know Bregman and Tucker would be on different teams. But the idea, the seed that was planted about the offense having a more patient, productive approach at the plate. So it's troubling that the front office has talked about how important having productive, patient approaches at the plate. And yet we're 30 plus games into the season, 40 games into the season, and we're still seeing the same troubles that we saw last year. We'll leave it there. One last reminder, if you listen on podcasts on places like Apple or Spotify, give us a 5-star rating. We do appreciate that. Our next scheduled episode is Thursday, so make sure you're subscribed to this channel. Thanks for listening. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon, saying so long, and until next time, go Astros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose MasterForce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from MasterForce today. Check out all our MasterForce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save.